You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
This is the Marketing Podcast Network.
Welcome to Uncorking a Story, the podcast that introduces you to the rich world of storytellers who share their personal journeys, creative processes, and the stories behind their stories, one conversation at a time. I'm your host, Mike Carlin, and I'm thrilled to be part of your writing journey. If you're an aspiring writer, a literary enthusiast, or simply someone who believes in the transformative power of words, you've come to the right place. Every week, we'll pop the cork on the world of successful storytellers and give you a healthy pour of inspiration, insight, and empowerment. My mission is to help writers like you realize your full potential through the transformative and therapeutic power of writing. Whether you're just starting your literary voyage or looking to refine your craft, I'm here to provide you with the knowledge, inspiration, and encouragement you need to embark on your own storytelling adventure. So, are you ready to uncork your story and let your creativity flow? Uncorking a Story is about to begin. Sit back, relax, and let the transformative magic of storytelling whisk you away. Welcome to Uncorking a Story.
Well, hello and welcome to another exciting episode of Uncorking a Story. I'm Mike Carlin, and I'm so happy to have you with me as I uncork another great story. I want to remind you to please follow Uncorking a Story on all social medias, including Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and TikTok. You can find us at Uncorking a Story on all of those platforms. Now, if you only listen to Uncorking a Story as an audio podcast, we encourage you to please watch us on YouTube, which is a great way to leave feedback for each episode and listen to it ad-free. So I encourage you to please subscribe to our YouTube channel by going to YouTube, searching for Uncorking a Story, and hitting subscribe. For you audio listeners out there, please subscribe, rate, and review Uncorking a Story wherever you get your podcast. Now, today on the show, we have Dr. Vilma Luz Caban, who has written a memoir entitled The Heart of an Advocate, and she's got a really, really fascinating and powerful story to share with you all. But one thing really struck me about this conversation, which is Dr. Caban's admission that her decision to travel to some faraway places, including Kenya and Egypt, was partly driven by her subconscious desire to run away from unresolved trauma from her childhood. Now, that was something that she realized after turning to creative nonfiction as a creative outlet. And as she put her story down on paper, Dr. Caban was able to start a healing process, which is now driving her to help others find the courage to capture their stories. And even, she's starting a publishing company to help them, you know, share the stories that they've been capturing. So this goes back to something that I've been talking a lot about lately, which is the transformative power of writing. You know, of course, we hope that our readers are moved by the stories that we share, but what about us? You know, writing is a very introspective process and is something that can change something within us in addition to all those great things it does for our readers. You know, it's no secret why therapists recommend journaling exercises during treatment and why journals are great fodder for memoirs. So, you know, while writing can be a very simple act, I am keenly aware of the challenges and how challenging it may be to experience and re-experience past events. You know, it can take a tremendous amount of courage to call up past memories and then put those memories down on paper. And then, of course, there's the prospect of sharing those memories with the world. And that can be daunting, you know, to put it mildly. But also remember that doing all of that can lead to a healing process inside you. And sharing your experiences with other people, you know, while that takes a tremendous amount of vulnerability, can also help other people. And that's a good thing. You know, we writers have to get comfortable with being vulnerable. So please don't let fear around vulnerability stop you. So now, in the immortal words of Ace Ventura, all righty then. Enough pontificating for me. It's time to uncork Dr. Vilma Luz Caban's story. Dr. Vilma Luz Caban is a dedicated educator with over 30 years experience in Westchester County, New York. She serves as an executive board member for the One Circle Foundation, and her personal passion lies in addressing social and economic inequities. She joins me today on Uncorking a Story to discuss her career and her memoir, The Heart of an Advocate. Welcome to Uncorking a Story, Vilma.
Hello, Mike. How are you? Thanks for having me here today and creating some space for the heart of this advocate. I am grateful to be here with you today.
Well, I'm excited to have you here and to chat with you. And I'm going to ask you the question I ask all of my guests, which is, where does your story as an author begin?
Wow. I could say as young as being that little girl who always loved to read, to that being that young person who wanted to be a teacher, to end up getting away from a space that was volatile. I grew up in a home riddled with domestic violence, and then just going to college to get away, becoming a teacher and having it so heavy on my heart to come back. And I became a New York City teacher for a short stint, but it was not safe. And so then I found a space in my home in Westchester County, and it's been my home for the almost 31 years. So I would say my story starts now at the end of my career, as I am less than 5 months away. And what does this Gen X teacher, woman, Latina do at this stage when the thought of retirement terrifies some people, especially in my profession?
So I'm curious, what drew you to teaching as a profession initially?
I would say that my desire to always learn more beyond the borders of my very small sheltered space. I would dive into encyclopedias in the library. I would hide out in the corners trying to see if I can convince the librarian to let me take home this reference book that you're not allowed to take home. And I think that's how I became a teacher, because I was quite convincing trying to, you know, it was probably that, or I was going to go into marketing to try to convince her that this was a good idea. And on some occasions, she was always very gracious and would let me I would have to treat it like a treasure. And I always did.
So was reading an escape for you somehow?
Yes, it was an escape. It was, I remember not really having a space to read and being creative about that. We lived in a one-bedroom apartment with four children, and there was really no room for just us to read. And so I remember convincing my mother that if I can just borrow the small lamp and a couple of cushions from the sofa, it would move the clothes over in the closet so I can read, and just bring out an extension cord so I was reading inside our closet. No. So yes, reading was my escape.
Well, tell us a little bit about The Heart of an Advocate and the story and backstory to your memoir.
I would say that because of the nature of teaching, it is a place where you're always pursuing advanced degrees, always refining your craft and delving into a richer, you know, pedagogy, and your profession is really about extending and broadening your craft to reach a student. And so it started with educational research, where I was pursuing at the time my master's and feeling like there were not enough young children of color who were advancing in the area of mathematics and diving into advanced studies of science. And it really concerned me. And so I decided to pursue my master's in math leadership and at Bank Street College, a very progressive college in New York City. And that's where it kind of started for me. I started to see this theme of social justice in learning for really breaking away what seemed to be gates set up just because of tracked learning and, you know, leveled learning, that it just kind of kept children on a track away from excellence. So I would say that's how it started. And then I pursued my doctorate because I felt that I was in a leadership position in the district I was teaching, and that, you know, was very limited. And I felt that I wanted to make more of a broader impact. And so that's when I decided to pursue it with the intention to perhaps teach at the different colleges and tried to activate some social justice around this idea of math. I just see it as math, you know, equity. I see it as it's a form of justice to be able to, you know, open pathways to advance learning in mathematics. Because if not, you're sealing off the citizenry access to future careers for our citizens. And so it was important to me. And so after that, I was approached by someone who was doing research in Kenya to join her. They needed an educational researcher because they needed to do a program evaluation on an educational program that was centered around girls fleeing Kenya. I mean, fleeing a child, becoming child brides. They were a part of an indigenous tribe. And so they were doing research with the United Nations to find ways to kind of create good practice in supporting these girls and the goal of replicating those models for other agencies and nonprofits and international organizations supporting girls like this. And so that's when it really opened up. And I was in geek land. I was so happy doing my educational research and really just churning out those program evals. And it just felt like a great space. But, you know, I was running away from myself. I was running away from my trauma and all the things that activated this desire to want to create change. And that was this notion around women and children really was about touching the heart of this little girl who never really addressed a lot of the issues about why I wanted to flee and why I wanted to make a difference. And I started doing a little bit of creative nonfiction writing about some of my experiences as a young woman as a part of the Bronx Memoir Project in New York City. I had moved to New York City for love, and I was trying this, and I was trying to break away the geekdom, you know, like, I don't want to be a geek, but I realized it was that was me. And, I wanted to really activate my voice as a writer, as a creative writer. And so that's how it started. And I then had a broken heart and started to crack open this hurt and this pain, diving into poetry and having fun with it, performing for the New Yorker Poets Cafe and other open mics in New York City, and feeling like, wow, I think I really found my voice. And then deciding at the behest of a few beautiful people in my life that said, Vilma, you should share your story. And I just didn't know where to begin. But I decided to make a huge investment in myself, and I hired a developmental editor because I didn't want to waste my time. That's the researcher in me. And we created and framed the arc of the story. And it took me almost 5 years to finish writing it.
Yeah. I imagine with a story like yours, you know, rooted in pain and rooted in trauma. And so much of that sounds like it was repressed yeah. trauma. You know, you've got these elements in your life where you are sort of, and to use your terms, kind of running away from it. And I was thinking when you were telling me about this opportunity to go to Kenya, I'm thinking that's a really long way from New York, where the needs that you've identified in inequities in minority populations are great and a lot closer to home. So, you know, part of me was thinking, my gosh, why go all the way to Kenya for this? But in a way, it makes sense if you're trying to sort of run away from some of the things that were, you know, not necessarily happening in your life at the time, but had happened to you in your life. You know, I'm curious if we could just, you know, revisit Kenya for a moment. What did you learn about yourself during that part of your life when you were that far away?
What I learned was, I will say that seeing these girls seeking refuge, and that really the director of that program was a Maasai herself who was a teacher. I identified strongly with the woman who was creating this program to support these girls. It also made me look at these little girls and how stoic they were and how they shared their story. And I remember having a translator and having the translator. And she was like, are you understanding what I'm saying? And I was saying, yes, I understand. And I was writing notes and really suspending any kind of reaction because I didn't want to, you know, I wanted to keep these girls feeling like they can share their story. And the minute we flinch, the minute we kind of create this, oh no, you know, it just clams them up. And she just thought, wow, how do you do that? And that's when it came back. Wow, how did I do that? And I mean, it wasn't as physically graphic as these poor girls, but what I did was I learned how to compartmentalize and I reached for excellence as my way to try to kind of pull myself out of that. And that's how it kind of brought me back little by little. Being in the shadows of the pyramids, I did some work and was able to present as an educational consultant. And I was able to, you know, meet with other dignitaries and delegates from the country, from not only the country, but across, you know, around the world. And standing in the shadow of the pyramids saying, what is this young Bronx girl doing here? I've always identified strongly as a New York City girl. And I realized that I was running away. I really was running away. And so I'm glad that something, you know, it just activated a voice for me to take a closer look at what compelled me to continue to do this work. And so that's where I am now, just trying to, you know, I think we all are an advocate at some stage in our life. And I believe that that's what my memoir really speaks to, really highlighting how it just looks different for different people. And, you know, just finding that space where you feel that you can be, you know, be of service and help a community.
You know, I do want to dig into the writing process for your memoir and all that. But before I do, I'm just picturing you in Kenya with these, you know, little girls, different language, different culture, different backgrounds. But it seems like you had a shared experience. And maybe that's like us understanding or you or the universe telling us, hey, we're all human beings here. We are really all part of the same global family. And we all have these, you know, whether we look different, we sound different, we don't necessarily understand each other's native tongues, but we can understand the experiences that other people have gone through. Did you feel a sense of empathy? Were you connecting on an empathetic level with these children?
I have such great memories. One of them, two of them really, but the first one being they would look at me and like they had seen me before. And one of the little girls dragged me to like a bulletin board by the main office where they were staying. And she pointed to a picture of Rosario Dawson. And, you know, and she, her little fingers just like gazed upon my lips. And she was trying to make sense. Who is this fair woman who has such, you know, broad features, but doesn't speak my language, but is here for me. And so, that was a memory that I'll never forget. At the time, there were a lot of actors who were supporting the work of like the Vagina Monologues to try to bring awareness to this issue. So it was becoming a place where many celebrities were swinging by. And so she was probably trying to figure out what was my role in all of this. And another memory was I brought some earrings for the girls. Now, traditionally, the girls, you know, they loved my hair. They loved touching my hair and just, you know, and stroking it and talking to me and Swahili. And I'm going, okay, you know, I don't know what they're saying, but they're saying love. So I received it, but I brought them some earrings and man, they were so excited, so happy. And I told them through the translator, the story of a pearl and how, one of the last gifts I gave my mother, you know, was a pearl. And because it's the symbolism of the pearl in it's a clam, and I showed him a picture of a clam, and I said, a clam, you know, gets a little granule, a little grain of sand inside and creates an irritation, and it's so uncomfortable. But it's amazing how it starts to wrap around this hurt, and it becomes like a healing coating. And then out of that hurt is this beautiful released pearl. And then I just said, you know, you've gone through a lot of hurt. I said, but you are your tribe's pearls. You will be able to go to school, because that was the goal, to try to get them to school, to finish school so that they weren't getting married at 10. And I said, and I can't wait to see what these beautiful pearls will bring to the world. And they were just so happy. And I was thrilled. And I felt that regardless of the language barrier, our hearts connected.
You mentioned in that beautiful analogy of a pearl and the healing coding. It sounds like writing in many ways for you was a healing coding. And I'm curious if you could reflect on that a little bit as you think about sort of the motivation to write your memoir, The Heart of an Advocate.
I was inspired by our boomer, Esmeralda Santiago. She is one of the first Latina Puerto Rican authors that I was ever aware of. She wrote the book When I Was Puerto Rican. And it's a story of her coming, immigrating from Puerto Rico to New York City and going through all those changes and culture shock and the dissonance that it creates. And I was so inspired by her story. But as much as I immediately identified with her story, I felt that there wasn't a story for me, the first generation Latina Puerto Rican in New York City trying to break free. And so I felt it was important to kind of speak to that. You know, I feel fortunate that now my contemporaries, there are several Latina authors out there, great authors like my mentor, Dr. Melissa Cosaquino, who's an English professor who works with the next generation of creative writers and in New York City and has asked me to join her and share my craft. To a millennial, Elizabeth Velasquez, who has written the novel. It's a juvenile novel called When We Make It, a Puerto Rican novel, a New Yorkian novel. And I wish I would have had those examples, you know, like Dr. Cosaquino wrote the story Carmen and Grace. It's a story of two girls, you know, trying to get through life's, you know, challenges and traps, growing up. In such dysfunction, but they make it through with their grit. And I didn't have that. And so I wish that I would have had that. I think I would have activated my voice as a writer sooner. And I believe that that's what this work is about now for me, being able to, as I come to a place to retire, I've really come close to coming back to my roots. I had attended a wonderful event, Latina Luminaries at Lincoln Center, where I got to see Sandra Guzman, the editor of the Daughters of Latin America. And she brought this beautiful anthology together of all these great women from all over the world, from Latin America, to write about their story. And Elizabeth being one of them and Esmeralda being also one of them. And I felt like, wow, so inspired. And they had an altar at the event. And I had brought a picture of my mother. And I had the time, I brought the proof of my book. It was just about to be launched. And I just left it at the altar. And a couple of months earlier, I was in Puerto Rico because I'm getting ready for this transition. And I brought my book and I stood on the land where my mother's mother and my mother's father at the time before were sharecroppers for sugar plantations. And they were finally able to purchase their land in the late 1950s. And I decided to dedicate my book to my ancestors and then come to this event and dedicate another space to my ancestors and be ready to now go back and toil just like my ancestors, but on another level to try to create voice and to create space. And that journey for me is the publishing house is going to be called La Casa de Maria. It was a house my mother was trying to build in secret as a refuge as she was trying to get away from my stepfather. So never got to see that vision happen, but now her daughter is going in her stead. So I will be there, ready, creating this publishing house from scratch because it never was finished. So I have now added general contractor to my list of things that, you know, teachers are have many gifts, but this will be interesting. And I've been, you know, really kind of polishing. I'm about to take a couple home deco courses and try to figure out some tiling, try to save some money doing it myself, not to mess it up too bad. But so, you know, now I'm at this place and I am rematriating. I am going back to my mother's motherland to be able to do this work.
So do you plan on living there full time, or are you going to split your time between New York and...
I am leaning really hard on living there full time, but I will tell you, I have some reservation because of the infrastructure of Puerto Rico in terms of health insurance. I live a very healthy life. I work hard at trying to honor my body, my temple, but I know that, you know, aging comes with a certain setback. So I am still, you know, my intention is to rematriate, to be there full time. But I am also open to, you know, if the publishing house expands and we have satellite locations to try to bring folks from New York to Puerto Rico, I'm open to having kind of like a bit of a, you know, transatlantic experience.
Well, it sounds like another adventure. Do you no longer feel like you're running away from something and now you're running towards something?
I feel like I'm running towards something, and I love the way you frame that. I believe that I want to create a space where I'm bridging. I want to see myself as a bridge. And many times, you know, like, for example, I had a friend who's, you know, who was saying, what are you going to do? Like, how do you not alienate, you know, marginalized writers because it's only in Puerto Rico? And I go, no, I totally understand that this is a space for anyone who is nostalgic and wants to, you know, go back to that. It's also a space for anyone who wants to feel like Puerto Rico is part of the United States. It's our gem. It's our pearl. And so I want to be able to create a bridge and say, come to the island, experience this. And, you know, and I believe that there's a space for that. I reached out to the National Puerto Rican Museum in Chicago and was very excited to hear back that they are, you know, exploring ways that they could incorporate the heart of an advocate in their educational programs. And, you know, wouldn't that be wonderful if out of that experience of being in the National Puerto Rican Museum, that you would then have an opportunity to come to La Casa de Maria and go through that writing retreat experience and publish? I mean, and you don't have to be Puerto Rican or Puerto Riqueño to be there. You can just be someone who has the heart that seeks the rhythm of a people that are storytellers. Our Taino indigenous people were storytellers. And I feel like I am cracking wide open that genetic code that says speak. And I hope that I can get writers to feel comfortable with their voice and share their stories to be able to capture it and crystallize it in book form.
When do you anticipate starting to take some submissions?
I'm seeking January 2025. I'm giving myself, when I retire, I'm giving myself a couple of weeks, and then I'm trying to get past hurricane season, you know, before hurricanes come, and get busy, and then, you know, try to really, that's why I said GC is going to be my new name right now, because I'm going to try to get some work done.
Very well, where can people pick up The Heart of an Advocate?
Well, you can find it on Amazon. Right now, I'm trying to get a great circle of reviewers to try to support me so I can make a pitch at Barnes & Noble. And I'm trying to reach out to other local public libraries, not only in New York City, but at my hometown in Milford at the time, and also reaching out in Westchester County, a couple of libraries. But definitely, you can go to Amazon. You can go to my publisher, Greenheart Press, Living Press, as well as going to my website, www.vilmaluzgabang.com.
There you go. We'll put all of those links on our show notes for people to just have one tap to buy the book and visit your website. And Vilma, I always like to end with a deep question, which is if you could go back in time and whisper some words of advice into your younger self's ear, you know, maybe it was that little girl who was begging the librarian to take the reference book home. What would you tell your younger self?
I love this question. I would say that it is okay to speak, because on the occasions that I did speak, I got into a lot of trouble for creating a ruckus and saying I should have stayed quiet. And I am giving you, you know, you did the right thing speaking, and you are giving yourself permission to model how to be brave and courageous. And those brave and courageous circles just create more brave and courageous circles.
Wonderful. Well, Dr. Vilma Luz-Caban, thank you so much for stopping by Uncorking a Story and letting me uncork yours.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much. I appreciate you so much. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Uncorking a Story. If you'd like more information about today's guest or to find out more about Mike, go to uncorkingastory.com. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe, rate, and review us at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Tune in every week to hear Mike Carlin uncork a new story.